Blog Talk Radio.
For radio as secular as our Constitution, tune in to Free Thought Radio.
Our Halloween program will regale you with very scary state church developments.
Then we'll talk with veteran court reporter Linda Greenhouse about something truly ominous.
The Supreme Court. Her new book is called Justice on the Brink.
This is the news in brief from the United Nations. Without a planet to live on, there will be no human rights. That powerful statement comes from UN High Commissioner for Human Rights Michelle Bachelet, ahead of the UN Climate Change Conference COP26, starting on Sunday in Scotland. For her, climate action is a human rights obligation and a matter of survival. Only urgent action can mitigate disasters that will have huge, and in some cases lethal, impacts on everyone. The High Commissioner called on member states to fulfill their climate finance commitments, not ignore them for a second year in a row. She also argued that those directly affected should have a seat at the table. The triple threat of climate change, pollution, and biodiversity loss constitutes the single greatest challenge to human rights in our era, Ms. Bachelet added. Developing countries are already suffering economic losses 3 times greater than high-income nations because of disasters related to climate. In a new report released on Thursday, the UN Trade and Development Body is calling for a transformative approach. These new strategies should include large-scale public investments for the future, as well as current threats and green industrial policies to drive growth and job creation. With rising temperatures, more intense heat waves, increasingly powerful cyclones, longer droughts, and higher sea levels are unavoidable. Adaptation costs for developing countries have doubled in the last decade. These will only go up, reaching $300 billion in 2030 and $500 billion in 2050. The UN Special Rapporteur Alina Doan called on Thursday for the lifting of unilateral sanctions by some countries, such as the United States, against Zimbabwe. She also urged meaningful dialogue on political reform, human rights, and the rule of law. Following a visit to the country, the experts said that sanctions had exacerbated social and economic challenges with devastating consequences for ordinary people. Over the last 20 years, sanctions have negatively impacted access to healthcare, food, safe drinking water, education, and employment. She said many companies, as well as foreign banks, applied zero-risk policies and were overly compliant, fearing heavy penalties for breaching sanctions. Alexandre Soares, UN News.
This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Stan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven.
Welcome to Free Thought Radio, and this is our Halloween 2021 broadcast. We're not starting with scary music, but we have a lot of scary information for you.
I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor, and this is the October 28th, 2021 edition of Free Thought Radio. Again, Grant Blaschka of Audio for the Arts is our engineer in the Stephen Yule Friendly Atheist Studio in Free Thought Hall, the national office of the Freedom From Religion Foundation.
And the Freedom From Religion Foundation is the producer of Free Thought Radio. It broadcasts and podcasts every week. And FFRF has two purposes: to educate the public, that's you, about non-theism, and to try to make sure that the godless constitution, secular government, is enforced in the United States. And by the way, October 31st, Halloween, is the last day, right at midnight, to register for the 44th Annual Convention. We skipped last year. This is in person in Boston. We have an incredible lineup, Gloria Steinem, Margaret Atwood, and our guest today, but there is no registration at the door, so go to fffrf.org/convention-2021, or just go to the events link at fffrf.org and register now.
Our guest in the second half of today's show will be the Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, Linda Greenhouse,
who will be speaking at the convention. We'll also talk momentarily with FFRF attorney Liz Cavell about her new report for FFRF called Casting Light, the Sunshine State's Problem of Religion in Its Public Schools. In Ask an Atheist this week, which is on Facebook Live every Wednesday at noon, FFRF attorney Liz Cavell and our Director of Governmental Affairs, Mark Dan, talked about building a better judiciary with Lena Zwarenstein. She's with the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights, of which FFRF is a member.
And during that show on Ask an Atheist, Lena spoke about the need to correct the imbalance on the courts.
When you have the judges who come with a particular agenda, not very much in favor of making sure that there is a separation of church and state. We have a demonstrated record of being anti-civil and human rights. We know that the arguments are becoming even more emboldened in the courts, that the cases that are being brought in the courts are even more extreme because the judges have become more extreme. So we are seeing in many cases some very cruel decisions that have already been handed down at the district courts, the appellate courts, and at the Supreme Court. And it's really this real acceleration to chip away some of our fundamental rights that's at risk, which you've already identified. And why we are all fighting so hard.
That show was very timely because this week is the one-year anniversary of the appointment of Amy Coney Barrett to the U.S. Supreme Court. You can watch that entire show on FFRF's YouTube channel. You can look for the Ask an Atheist playlist and tune in next week at noon Central.
On our broadcast TV show, which is called Free Thought Matters, as a memorial this week, this coming Sunday, we are replaying our entertaining interview with the actor Ed Asner. Ed Asner died in August this year at the age of 91. Ed Asner was in Madison, right here, to perform in a play called God Help Us, in which he played God. Annie Laurie asked him about that.
So you're portraying God. Do you mind if I ask whether you believe in God?
I don't know if I do or not. I don't think so.
You were raised Jewish, right?
Yeah.
So Orthodox Jewish?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it didn't take?
Well, it did. I was drilled into me very intensively. My bar mitzvah was a gross failure. It was a terrible, terrible. I sang too high. I sang too fast. I think my dad probably cursed me on that day.
So Ed Asner later joined FFRF's Board of Honorary Directors and received FFRF's Clarence Darrow Award. And during his acceptance speech, videotaped for our convention last year, Ed Asner had nice things to say about FFRF.
You are brave, wonderful people, so essential to a democracy such as America, which needs you badly. You're setting a great example for all freedom lovers.
That was nice to hear. You can see that entire Free Thought Matters interview with Ed Asner this Sunday on broadcast TV in 13 major city markets.
So to see the market, stations, and times, check fffrf.org/news. There's a drop-down that shows our video. You can find Free Thought Matters there. You can also watch that show right now. We put them up on Thursdays on FFRF's Free Thought Matters playlist on our YouTube channel.
So in the news, Ed Asner was right about the importance of educating about state-church separation. At a recent senatorial debate in Ohio, the question was asked of the candidates, what's the greatest crisis facing kids? And one of the candidates gave a completely erroneous reply. Now, we have to point out, FFRF is a nonpartisan 501c3, so we can't discuss the politics and we won't name the candidate. But we can point out the many flaws in his answer.
They're trying to take God out of all aspects of society. And they're trying to water down on the Judeo-Christian bedrock of America.
Of course, we're not trying to remove God from all aspects of society, and groups like FFRF fight to ensure that government power is not abused to promote religion. And there is no Judeo-Christian bedrock on which America was founded. We are a secular nation.
A lot of these Soros-funded organizations, they advance the argument that the separation of church and state exists, and for that reason you can't teach kids about religion.
So this is another straw man argument that you can't teach kids about religion. Public schools may indeed teach about religion as long as they don't preach religion. By the way, we'd still love to get a check from George Soros. We certainly wouldn't turn that down.
But we have yet to do that.
My personal feeling is there's no such thing as separation of church and state.
Well, feelings cannot argue with facts. The founders separated religion and government when they were first among nations to adopt an entirely godless constitution. There's no God there. The Supreme Court and lower courts have agreed. President Thomas Jefferson wrote his famous letter in 1802 in which he explained the meaning of the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment as building a wall of separation between church and state. He cleared this with his attorney general. Many do not seem to understand this basic fact about the United States.
The framers of the Constitution envisioned a country where in the classroom kids would learn about God, that in the classroom kids would learn about good versus evil, and that Judeo-Christian ethic separates itself from Islam and atheism and all these other belief sets on so many levels, but one of the main levels is our acknowledgement of good versus evil.
He sounds like a preacher, doesn't he? Public education is not mentioned in the Constitution. Jefferson very famously designed the University of Virginia to be a secular institution where religion was irrelevant. Besides, religion doesn't teach kids about right and wrong. Religion equates morality with obedience to God, which is a truly dangerous idea.
Yes, so we do know the difference between right and wrong as atheists, and we are able to point out that these religious remarks are wrong. In terms of other news, there's so much to comment on. We do want to talk briefly that we wanted to praise the Congressional Freethought Caucus, which has 14 members, for recommending that regulatory authorities investigate a very dubious religious form of health care that is called, Health Care Sharing Ministries, known as HCSMs. And many of the members of the caucus, led by Representative Jared Huffman, Jamie Raskin, signed on to this letter to the Federal Trade Commission. And we're going to have Andrew Seidel on next week to explain more about what is wrong and how people are being denied true health care and being scammed by these health care, quote-unquote, sharing ministries. And then we want to talk about how we constantly, I guess every 4 or 8 years, write letters to the president, urging the president to end diplomatic relations with the Vatican. And so we did that again with Biden because he had made his appointment of yet another Catholic to this ambassadorship, which we think is unconstitutional. And in fact, every ambassador since this was created by President Ronald Reagan has been Catholic. And we have a phrase in the Constitution that says there should be no religious test for public office. This is like a Catholic sinecure, and it should end.
So should they send you to be the ambassador, Annie Laurie, next time?
So we also, of course, comment that there is coming up November 1st to be oral arguments in the SB 8 ban on abortion in Texas, which has eliminated virtually all abortion care in the state. Because it's at 6 weeks when most women don't even know they've missed, it's 2 weeks after a missed period. And we all know the crisis that Texas women are in. It's creating crisis in nearby states. Once again, the U.S. Supreme Court refused to block it. They are holding oral arguments, and we'll be talking about what happens at those oral arguments next week.
So Free Thought Now is the blog of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. We just moved to a new domain. You can now find our blog at freethoughtnow.org.
And FFRS Legal Director Rebecca Market this week wrote an excellent blog analyzing how radically the Supreme Court has moved toward Christian nationalism since Amy Coney Barrett's appointment, again the anniversary this week. And reproductive rights intern Barbara Alvarez has regular blogs on the status of abortion under siege by religious opponents. And you can read all of that at FFRF.org. And I have a blog going up today about Liberty University's culture of blaming rape victims and how it feeds right back to the Bible that that organization, that Liberty University is predicated on, the Bible, the double standard. You can read all about it. It's there are 12 women suing the university now, and their stories are devastating, what has happened to them and how they get blamed. And it's all to do with the Liberty Way, which is a Christian right moral code or honor code that has more to do with the Muslim religion in some ways than even the Bible, where you're basically breaking their code against premarital sex if you're raped. So you can read all about it at freethoughtnow.org. And we also had many other statements up this week, but let's go to the complaints.
Let's go to some basic complaints. Our attorneys are very busy. FFRF attorney Chris Lyon wrote a letter to the Galena Park Independent School District in Texas complaining that North Shore Elementary is collecting money for Operation Christmas Child. That's a proselytizing group under the Samaritan's Purse headed by the Reverend Franklin Graham. They announced that the purpose of their charity earns us a hearing for the good news of eternal life through Jesus Christ. Franklin Graham, by the way, the son of Billy Graham, has made several harmful comments about LGBT community and COVID vaccines. We've told the school that they should use secular charities from now on, pointing out that if you organize a donation drive that employs school staff and resources for donations to advance the mission of a religious ministry, that violates the Constitution. Then Chris Lyon also sent a letter to Alabama to the Blount County School District complaining about Gideon Bibles being passed out in the classrooms. The federal courts have held that Bible distribution in public schools violates the Constitution. Also, the staff at the school, at Susan Moore Elementary School, have been displaying Christian crosses, Bible verses, and other messages about religion on the walls. We've advised them that those displays must be removed because they send an illegal, coercive message to students and members of the community.
And then I can finally end, I guess, with our statement that we should point out that if you're a member of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, we have a governmental affairs director working for you in D.C., and it's Mark Dann, and so he has a monthly column called FFRF's Mark on the Hill, get it? And he has an excellent report this month about how we need a judiciary that works for us, and there's a lot of good momentum going on. In D.C., we keep trying to chip away at Christian nationalism and trying to promote things that support the separation of church and state.
So we're going to take a break. After the break, FFRF attorney Liz Cavell is going to tell us about this new report. What's it called? Casting Light? About this?
The Sunshine State's Problem of Religion in its Public Schools.
This is a brand new report that Liz has put together. She'll be telling us all about the problems about religion in Florida's public schools. And then after that, in the second half of the show, we'll be speaking with Linda Greenhouse, the Pulitzer Prize winning journalist and writer and columnist for the New York Times.
An expert who covered the New York Times for 30 years.
So stay tuned. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. We'll be back with more Free Thought Radio.
Hi, I'm Julia Sweeney, and I'm an atheist and former Catholic. I even wrote a play about it called Letting Go of God. Right now, Catholic bishops are using their considerable influence to deny women contraceptive rights. Please join the Freedom From Religion Foundation and help keep church and state separate. You can call 1-800-335-4021, that's 1-800-335-4021, or visit FFRF.org to stand up for true religious freedom.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Free Thought Radio. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker. And that music is from the song De Colores, which is a very popular song in Mexico. And before we talk with our guest, Liz Cavell, today, we want to remind you about the upcoming Secular Day of the Dead, based on that Mexican tradition, which is organized by the Free Thought Society. This Tuesday, November 2nd, at 6:45 p.m. Eastern via Zoom, and you're welcome to attend. If you want to sign up and listen to the actress Julia Sweeney interview the actor John Huertas about religion and unbelief and honoring the dead, please sign up. You can go to the FT Society, that's Free Thought Society, ftsociety.org, and look under events to sign up for next Tuesday's Secular Day of the Dead.
And you can participate. You can reserve a spot to memorialize in a secular way a loved one and many other participants and many other co-sponsors, including FFRF. So we have on the phone with us attorney Liz Cavell. Welcome back, Liz.
Hi, thanks.
I should say FFRF attorney Liz Cavell. And Liz, you've been working on a new report. It's called Casting Light, the Sunshine State's Problem of Religion in Its Public Schools. And this is like a sneak preview. What is going on in Florida? Why did we do a report like this?
Yes, so Florida has become one of the states that FFRF hears from parents and students the most about state church violations in its public schools. And over the years, we have seen a pattern build up of the same types of complaints and violations coming out of Florida schools. And we've corresponded with many of the school districts a number of times. And it's just one of the states where we don't get a lot of cooperation from a critical mass of school districts that are just repeat offenders that parents and students keep reaching out to us for help with. And so the purpose of this report was to shine some light on the problem and draw attention to the fact that it's really a statewide problem of religious promotion in public schools that superintendents and school districts need to address.
And in the report, it talks about some of the common violations, you know, that basically teachers, coaches, administrators, volunteers, and other officials are using school time and resources to promote or endorse religion. Is that a fair summary?
Yes, and a lot of it is really kind of the traditional, you know, clearly unconstitutional conduct you would think of, like prayer led by coaches, prayer led by teachers, Bibles being distributed in school, religious baccalaureate ceremonies being hosted by school, football teams promoting religion through coaching staff and things like that. And then there's a whole host of other violations that are cropping up because, of course, it's religious promotion is just systemic in these public schools.
So we do talk about some specific counties, but before we do that, there are 67 public school districts in Florida. And you say in this report, Liz, that we have received complaints occurring in nearly all of them. Mm. So that really is systemic.
Do they all use the same legal counsel, or does each district have its own?
No, they don't. Many of them use outside counsel, and so oftentimes they don't bring in outside counsel to deal with. You know, keep in mind we're referring to complaints that we've tried to handle cooperatively with school districts, oftentimes superintendents. This is not through litigation, but just through advocacy and education. We've corresponded with school districts, administrators to bring this stuff to their attention and give them a chance to correct this through education of their staff. And that is the cooperation that is just notoriously missing in so many Florida school districts that it really stands out among other states.
So this report singles out four county schools, Polk County, Marion County, Orange County, and Osceola County, for being repeat offenders. And there is an example of a school district that did the right thing, which is Hillsborough County Public Schools. So you want to do a little shout out about that. But we don't have a whole lot of time left. But in the next 2 or 3 minutes, Liz, do you want to talk about these repeat offenders?
Yes. So by no means are these four districts the only repeat offenders. This is a pattern. They're meant to illustrate what is really a statewide pattern. There are many school districts besides these four that we receive repeat complaints from and zero or very little cooperation from administrators to correct these violations. And the problem is it's the combination, right? These are Orange County Public Schools is Greater Orlando, Osceola County as well is Kissimmee and some of the Greater Orlando areas. So these are not rural school districts. These are large, diverse student bodies with parents and students who are really alienated by the religious promotion of their school districts. And so, we're hearing from them constantly. And we're trying to engage these districts in cooperation, and we want to work with them. We've sued Orange County Public Schools before, and we still have a hard time engaging their cooperation. And so we don't want to be in lawsuits with these school districts. We want to be, working with them to correct these violations before they get out of hand.
And they are egregious. For example, and this report will soon be up on our website, but Orange County Public Schools has allowed church events and displays in their schools, and teachers have promoted prayer circles, baccalaureates, recitation of the Lord's Prayer, football mission trips, and other similar violations. So it's a very serious problem, and we are very grateful to you, Liz, for joining us today and casting some light on the problem of religion in Florida public schools.
Yes, thank you so much for talking with me.
And this is a nicely laid out printed brochure. I assume we're going to be mailing this to some of the
districts. Probably emailing it to all the districts soon.
Well, thank you, Liz. So we're going to take a break, and after the break, we'll be speaking with the Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, Linda Greenhouse, who was with the New York Times on the Supreme Court page. So stay tuned. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. We'll be right back with more Free Thought Radio.
I'm Ron Reagan, an unabashed atheist, and I'm alarmed by the intrusions of religion into our secular government. That's why I'm asking you to join the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest and most effective organization of atheists and agnostics, working to keep state and church separate. Phone 1-800-335-4021, 1-800-335-4021, or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org. Ron Reagan, lifelong atheist, not afraid of burning in hell.
Protect the First Amendment. It protects you. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker. The United States Supreme Court is a topic that a lot of people are talking about right now. And today we're going to talk with New York Times columnist and Supreme Court expert Linda Greenhouse. We're going to ask about the threats to the separation of church and state, to reproductive rights, and more by this current Supreme Court. Linda Greenhouse is the Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter who covered the U.S. Supreme Court for the New York Times from 1978 to 2008. She's also president of the American Philosophical Society. Her many books include a biography of Justice Harry A. Blackmun called Becoming Justice Blackmun, Before Roe v. Wade, Voices That Shaped the Abortion Debate Before the Supreme Court's Ruling, written with a colleague, as well as The U.S. Supreme Court, A Very Short Introduction, The Burger Court and the Rise of the Judicial Right, Just a Journalist, Reflections on the Press, Life and the Spaces Between, published by Harvard University Press. Her new book, which is to be published in early November, is called Justice on the Brink, The Death of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, The Rise of Amy Coney Barrett, and the 12 months that transformed the Supreme Court.
And Linda Greenhouse does write a biweekly column on the law. She's a clinical lecturer and senior research scholar in law at Yale. And she's spoken to us before, and we're delighted she'll be receiving FFRF's Clarence Darrow Award and statuette at our upcoming November 19th and 20th National Convention in Boston. And a reminder, the last day to register is by midnight on Halloween. So go to our events link at the website FFRF.org to do so.
So speaking of Halloween, I think some of our topic today is going to be kind of scary. So Linda Greenhouse, thanks so much for joining us today.
My pleasure, and it is a scary time for those of us who are committed to the separation of church and state, I'll have to say.
And you are such a good watchdog of that, Linda, and we have so much to talk about, but first, you wrote a column in September for the New York Times, which had a title that was music to our ears. It was called, God Has No Place in Supreme Court Decisions, and this column in particular pertains to the precarious status of abortion rights and how religion is kind of the elephant in that room. And I just want to quote something from your piece. You ask, who let God into the legislative chamber? The answer is, we did. Our silence has turned us into enablers of those who are now foisting their religious beliefs on a country founded on opposition to an established church. So could you summarize a little bit more about your concerns expressed in that column?
Yeah, I mean, what prompted that column, in addition to my general concern about the threat to the separation, was I was looking down the list of briefs that have been filed in the Mississippi abortion case, which is going to be heard in December. The Supreme Court's website lists an electronic version of all the briefs, and there are like 130 briefs filed in that case. And on Mississippi's side, the side of those who are supporting the state's ban on abortion after 15 weeks of pregnancy, I was just thunderstruck by the proportion of briefs from religious entities, either explicitly religious entities, you know, the Catholic Church, Evangelical Church, the kind of affiliates, or from entities that I personally know are basically speaking from the religious point of view in the public space. I started counting these up, and I said, what is going on here? You know, this is a case about women's constitutional right to abortion. It's a case about liberty and due process and privacy and all those things. It should not be a case about religion. But obviously, in the minds of many people, it is, and my fear is that in the minds of a majority of the Supreme Court, not that they will acknowledge this, it will be. So I kind of looked around the landscape, and I saw that in state after state, in red state after red state, as politicians are proposing anti-abortion legislation and so on, they're speaking in terms of, you know, God is telling us to do this. And you know, conservatives in the judicial world are known for believing in originalism, the original understanding of the Constitution's framers. And I'm no huge expert on the history of the United States, but I'm here to say that the framers would be shocked to think that God was being invoked as the basis for passing legislation that impinges on individuals' personal freedoms.
And at FFRF, we did also do an amicus brief in that Dobbs case, trying to
correct
the record or pointing out the religious motivation, you know, but I think we have to do even more on that. Now, that case is being heard, as you said, December 1st, but next week, I'm sure you're watching what is happening to SB 8, which is the Texas abortion ban. Do you have any thoughts on that mess?
Well, my basic thought, and I suspect your readers share this, is that the court made a huge and really almost inexplicable mistake on September 1st, on the eve of the law taking effect, when they were asked urgently by the abortion providers in Texas to just put a stay, put a hold on the law, so that the judicial proceedings that were going on in the state could proceed without the law taking effect and cutting off access to abortion for, you know, the second most populous state in the country. And the court didn't do that. And they still haven't done that. A week ago Friday, they granted the case. They agreed to hear the case on a very expedited basis. They're going to hear it on November 1st, day after Halloween. But they still haven't issued a stay. And that is so counter to the way the court usually behaves. I mean, just last night, for instance, the court issued a stay in a garden variety commercial case, a procedural case about international arbitration. And the losing party in the case had come to the court and said, you know, we're going to file a formal appeal known as the petition for certiorari. So please put the case on hold and give us time to get our appeal in. And the court did that. The court always does that. It's a kind of abortion exceptionalism. They do it for everybody except abortion providers. So
and throwing the whole court or the whole state and women in that state into crisis. I mean, it was such a horrible thing to do.
Well, Sotomayor pointed that out.
The catastrophe. Yeah. She used the word catastrophe the last time they failed again to block it. What do you think is going to happen? Are they just going to put this on hold until Dobbs is heard or decided?
I'm afraid so. I mean, they might, well, the question they agreed to decide is, can these lawsuits, there are two lawsuits against the state, one brought by the providers and one brought by the Biden administration in the name of the United States, can these lawsuits proceed? And if the answer is yes, the lawsuits will proceed in the lower courts. But that doesn't mean that the law will be stopped from being in effect. That would require a separate order, just one sentence, but an order by the Supreme Court. I mean, one problem is it takes the votes of four of the nine justices to agree to hear a case, but it requires five votes to issue an order that would put a case on hold, that would grant a stay or an injunction. So the difference between four and five evidently is crucial here. And the dissenters are the three liberals on the court, Justice Sotomayor, whom you just mentioned, Justice Kagan, Justice Breyer, and the Chief Justice. Now, he's no liberal, and he doesn't like abortion. He's very opposed to the court's abortion jurisprudence, but he also has his wits about him. And what Texas is doing is just a blatant defiance of constitutional norms. And as Chief Justice of the United States, he can't put up with that. So he's also in dissent, but he needed a fifth vote and he didn't get it.
And we want to talk about it, your new book in the coming break, after the break, which is Justice on the Brink. And this is talking about how we came to this when Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg was replaced in 30-some days by a Christian nationalist right-winger, Amy Coney Barrett. And your book is Justice on the Brink, The Death of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, The Rise of Amy Coney Barrett, and the 12 Months That Transformed the Supreme Court. So we're going to come right back after the break, Linda, ask you about that book and also maybe the intersection of religion and the death penalty.
I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. We'll be right back with more interview with Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Linda Greenhouse.
This is Janine Garofalo. Are you tired of right-wing politicians who desperately want to impose their religious beliefs on the rest of us? I know I am. That's why I'm asking you to support the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Join the fight and call the Freedom From Religion Foundation toll-free at 1-800-335-4021. That's 1-800-335-4021. Or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation website at ffrf.org. That's www.ffrf.org. Proud to be an atheist, Janine Garofalo.
Beware of dogma. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
Welcome back. I'm Dan Barker. A lot of conservatives are claiming that the election was stolen. Well, I think the Supreme Court has been stolen, and we're talking about the Supreme Court today with Linda Greenhouse, the Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and author. She wrote for the New York Times on the Supreme Court. Welcome back to the show, Linda.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So your new book is going to be hot off the press November 9th, and it's called Justice on the Brink, The Death of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, The Rise of Amy Coney Barrett, and the 12 Months That Transformed the Supreme Court. And, of course, we just spent the last segment talking about the dangers with abortion rights and the court, and all of this is because of what happened in the last 12 months, correct? So tell us about Justice on the Brink.
It's a chronicle of the court's amazing last term, the term with the three Trump justices, Justice Gorsuch, Justice Amy Coney Barrett, Brett Kavanaugh, the term that began 2 weeks after Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg died. So what happened during that term? What we see is the rise of a powerful conservative majority, so powerful that Chief Justice John Roberts, a very conservative man, lost control of the Supreme Court in many respects. The book begins with an account of the last month of, you might say, previously normal life when Ruth Ginsburg was still on the court and Roberts was still in control. And then what happens? Well, of course, in the middle of the pandemic, a number of jurisdictions were placing capacity limitations on various venues so that these wouldn't become super spreader events. People couldn't gather, whether for worship or shopping or entertainment, whatever. And various religious groups were bringing constitutional challenges to these public health measures. They were claiming that to limit the attendance at a church service was to violate the Constitution's guarantee of free exercise of religion. When Ruth Bader Ginsburg was still alive, those challenges had been rejected by votes of 5-4. Once Amy Coney Barrett came on the court, those challenges prevailed. And so over Chief Justice Roberts' dissent, the court overturned capacity limits in New York and later on in the spring in California. It was just a crazy case where no more than three couples were allowed to gather in a home for any purpose. And two people who like to hold religious services in their homes said, but that discriminates against us. Of course, it didn't. It was in the home for any purpose, but the court ruled that California couldn't restrict the number of people who could gather in a home for religious purposes. So what was going on was a constant privileging of religion above all other claims, claims of, against discrimination, all kinds of claims, and it was a very significant, telling, and scary turn of events that the book recounts during those 12 months.
And we haven't had the privilege of reading this book yet because we haven't got a copy of it yet, but do you talk about the shadow docket, Linda, and what's been happening there?
Well, a lot of these cases were handled on the shadow docket. And by shadow docket, of course, we mean cases that were not formally granted review with briefs and arguments so that the public is really informed of what's happening. These were orders that came down, well, the first COVID order, which overturned the New York limitations, came down at close to midnight the night before Thanksgiving.
Yes, as if it was some kind of emergency.
Yeah. And so the shadow docket is very troubling in that way. So, yes, I mean, I don't talk about it as an entity, but basically all of these orders took place on the shadow docket.
I thought shadow dockets were just for extreme, like, emergency situations.
Well, that's right. That's exactly right. And, of course, the emergency, for instance, in the California limitations that the court overturned in April, the emergency was that the limitations were going to expire in a few days.
Right.
But the conservatives on the court wanted to make some law, and they wanted to keep control of the case. They couldn't let the case just expire and become moot. so they treated it as an emergency so that they could write an opinion that would overturn the limitations.
And they also did the same thing in New York State, because we had the same, that was about to expire and,
yes,
you know, become moot. So bizarre. Yeah. So as we talked, yeah, about in the last segment, they don't consider denial of a constitutional right to end an unwanted pregnancy to be an emergency that needs to be blocked, but stuff like this.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely right. And, you know, the notion that this was a public health emergency that required the states to protect people. Remember the Rose Garden ceremony at which the president introduced his nominee, Amy Coney Barrett, to the world, became a super spreader event.
That's
and
right.
Many members of the White House staff came down with COVID because they were all sitting together, even though it was outside, but without masks on, because it was President Trump. Of course, he couldn't wear a mask in his presence. And many, many of them got sick. So we know about public health.
And your book probably goes into Amy Coney Barrett's rather extraordinary background.
Yes, it does. I mean, you know, I'm willing to give her, as a justice, the benefit of the doubt. I'm willing to wait and see what she says on abortion. We don't know.
Mm-hmm.
What she says on some of these issues, her actual formal vote on the merits in the court's big religion case, which was the Fulton case out of Philadelphia, was actually very temperate. She distinguished herself from Justice Sam Alito.
Who is the most probably, hardest-hitting extremist, perhaps?
Absolutely. So, you know, I'm waiting to see. We'll see what she does.
So, yeah, so, but it does seem like our nation is in great trouble with not just abortion rights, and also we are looking at the voting rights issue and state church, all kinds of things. And, of course, now the Supreme Court has accepted that Christian flag case out of Boston, and I wondered what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, so that's, of course, that's a case that they actually did take. And the city of Boston has a practice of raising flags that celebrate different private things. And they refuse to raise the Christian flag. So the question is, does the government have a choice? This is government speech, and the precedents of the court suggest that the government can choose, as a matter of its own First Amendment rights, what it chooses to speak about or not speak about. And so can't be forced to raise a flag that it doesn't choose to raise. And, you know, we'll see if the precedents that really support Boston's position that it doesn't have to raise this particular flag, or whether the court's going to take a whack at those precedents.
Well, the specter of forcing a city, a secular city, to have to put up a Christian flag, the same one that was flying on January 6th with a lot of those protesters, to me is almost unbelievable.
Because it sends
a signal that you're a Christian city.
It's a troubling sign that the court agreed to review this case.
Because the city was winning.
That's right, yeah.
Are we going to see that flag in Boston at our convention?
No, you will not be seeing that in Boston. Well, I think Dan has a question.
Well, I was just wondering, you know, public perception or the public opinion about the legitimacy of the current court is way down right now. And a lot of us are viewing the court as more politicized than maybe it's always been politicized. But do you think public opinion matters to the court when they make the decisions?
Well, I think it's hard to generalize. I don't think it matters at all to some of them if their agenda is winning or is in their hands. They'd rather have the agenda than the public approval. I think it does matter to some. I think it matters to the Chief Justice because his name is on the door. It's the Roberts Court. He wants it to be a court that goes down in history as worthy of our esteem. So we'll see. 80% of the public tells pollsters that they do not want to see Roe against Wade overturned. 80%.
Wow.
But yet the court is very likely to do it nonetheless, and that's a crisis.
That is a crisis.
Yeah.
Well,
so
we can't wait to read your book, which basically asks, is this still John Roberts' Supreme Court, or does it now belong to Donald Trump?
Huh.
So you're the book will be out the 9th. You can get it autographed at the Freedom From Religion Foundation's in-person convention in Boston the weekend of the 19th and 20th of November, and you better sign up by Halloween if you want to be there. And
it'll be nice to see you there again, Linda,
in Boston.
I look forward to it. I can't wait.
You and Gloria Steinem and Margaret Atwood and many other great speakers that are coming. So.
Yeah, we'll be talking about all of these, chewing on all of these issues with a bunch of like-minded people who are concerned about constitutional principles, so that will be comforting. So thanks so much for joining us today, Linda Greenhouse.
My pleasure.
And thank you, Grant Blaschka, for producing the show in the Stephen Yule Friendly Atheist Studio. And thank you, listeners in Philadelphia and New Jersey to WOOM, listeners in Madison, Wisconsin, right here in our hometown, to WIDE and WMUULP, in Janesville, Wisconsin, to WADR, in Central Texas, to KEOS, in Central Missouri, KOPN, that's in Columbia, in Eugene, Oregon, KEPW, in San Marcos, Texas, KZSM, and then over in Vermont, New Hampshire, WOOL, Black Sheep Radio, and hello to listeners in Ithaca, New York, and Watkins Glen to WRFI. If you're listening to the podcast, as many thousands of you do, please give us a thumbs up on your provider. Tell your family and your friends to find out more about Free Thought Radio at ffrf.org/radio.
And find out more about the Freedom From Religion Foundation at our website, ffrf.org, where you can join. You can also click and ask for information. We'd be glad to send you a sample of our newspaper, Free Thought Today, and a brochure about our 40-plus years of activism. And we invite you to tune in next week for more rational radio and blasphemous broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.
I hope someday